Hi folks, Nathan here. Once again, thanks for joining us for the Frontline. I have a couple of things that I want to go over today. We're going to be giving you an update on AB 1955. We're going to talk a little bit about the Oklahoma Supreme Court ruling related to charter schools, religious instruction, and we're going to talk a little bit about upcoming events and then also the CHIA support network. So let's get into it. Welcome to The Frontline with FPM, where we talk about California politics, homeschool freedom, parental rights, and the family. I'm your host, Nathan Pierce, and thanks for joining us today. Let's jump right in and see what's going on here on The Frontline. All right, let's go ahead and jump into this. We're going to start with AB 1955. With remembering that the king's heart is like channels of water in the hand of the Lord, we need to recognize that all things that are going on are within God's plan and His design. So we need to trust that He knows what He's doing. AB 1955 has passed through the California State Assembly with a vote of 60-15. That's the vote for getting it out of the state assembly, and that's 80 assembly members in that house, California State Assembly, and that would mean that it's a significant majority that voted for that bill. In fact, that's 60 out of 80, so that's a three-quarters vote voted for this bill, AB 1955. So that's a disappointment that many of them voted for it. It was perhaps somewhat anticipated that they would vote for it, but I was surprised, I guess, about how many were completely sold on pushing this bill forward. It now goes to the governor. The governor can be contacted. You can give him a call and ask him to veto the bill. He can still do that. And so there's information on that on our website. If you go to our bill page, if you go to fpmca.org/AB1955, you'll find the latest action item and latest information there. So that's AB 1955. It's been sort of a whirlwind these last few weeks, as it was a late bill being a gut amendment from another bill. So it was sort of a last minute, let's throw this language into this bill that's already got something else in it and push it through, really ram it through at top speed, and they have really moved it through as quickly as they could in order to, you know, get this bill passed during Pride Month. And it's definitely a process that's been fraught with really shocking experiences in terms of the majority, the party in control, not allowing a lot of information to be spread, a lot of people not being allowed to speak. In fact, even this morning, Thursday morning, when we saw the debate on the floor of the California State Assembly, we saw a lot of the people being told they could not speak, and then eventually there was something worked out, and the folks that wanted to speak in opposition to this bill were allowed to speak for a short time, but the debate was very limited. A lot of the information that was put out about the bill by the authors is not accurate, and there was a lot of folks just saying that the conservative perspectives on this bill are wrong, and a lot of name calling, a lot of things. Saying that that conservatives don't care about children. I think there were some that eventually acknowledged that parents that are conservatives do care about children, but generally the attitude was very very rude and unbecoming of those that were in control of the debate in the California State Assembly. It was very disappointing to see that. Not very respectful of others' opinions. So that was disappointing, but ultimately we know God's in charge of this whole thing, and so we honor Him. We accept that what has happened and move on to really see what can we do next. And what we can do next on AB 1955 is we can make phone calls to the governor and ask him to veto the bill. We can also get involved in other legislative battles, and we can make sure that we're involved in the upcoming elections, because these elections really make a difference here in California. When we talk about the California State Assembly and California State Senate elections, they matter. And we need to just pursue that and recognize that those elections for these state offices have an impact on our day-to-day lives. So moving next to the Oklahoma Supreme Court, the Oklahoma Supreme Court did rule on the issue of charter schools using government funds for education in religious instruction. And regardless of whether that is the instruction itself, the teaching, verbal instruction, or whether it's funding curriculum, either one of those things, we can see that this ruling that forbids or says that religious instruction in a charter school is illegal, or in other words, a charter school that is a religious school is unconstitutional in this case, is once again reminding us that when there's government funds involved in education, there's government control in that education. And so we can learn from this and be reminded that when you have control over the finances of an education system, an education platform, you also control what education is taking place there. So King's coin, King's men is a phrase that comes to mind. He who controls the purse of that education system controls the minds of those being taught. So something very important for us to remember here, and we need to keep that in mind moving forward and making sure that we continue to protect our freedoms here in California by making sure that there is an option to an education option that is free of government funds. Upcoming events in July, we have I'll be speaking at a church in Elk Grove this coming Sunday, but also coming up in a couple of weeks in San Diego is the Outsourced Conference. Dr. Brian Ray, Dr. Lisa Dunn, and I all will be speaking there at the Outsourced Conference in San Diego. Chula Vista Christian University is the host of this event, so I would encourage you to be there. This is an event about rescuing children from the clutches of the corrupt public school system, and trying to help find those families an alternative that will help kids learn better and be in a safer environment. Next, that's July 19th in San Diego. So I would encourage you to check that out. That's the Outsourced Conference in San Diego. Next is the Support Network registration is now open through CHEA. CHEA of California, Christian Home Educators Association of California, has a support network. The support network is it's a network of different groups throughout the state of California whose goal is to support the homeschool community in their local area. And the support network connects all these different groups throughout the state of California so that if somebody wants to find a group in their area, they can contact CHEA and find a group that is near them, that is in their local area, that they can connect with and get support for their private home education journey. And that is a great place to start by connecting with CHEA and having your group be part of the CHEA support network. So I would encourage you, if you are a leader of a support network group, then it's time to renew your membership in the CHEA support network. And then if you are part of a group that is perhaps not a CHEA support network group, you need to really look into whether or not you could get your local group more engaged by having your group become a member of the CHEA support network and help strengthen the homeschool community in California for today, for making homeschooling stronger today in California, as well as for future generations. Finally, I would say also to those of you that are in a group that maybe is not a member of the support network, or perhaps you don't know if your group is in a support network, or maybe you don't know of a group in your area and you're not part of a group, but you want to find one, contact CHIA and look for a group in your area. You can go on the CHIA website, CHEAOFCA.org, and click on the directory and search on the directory for your area for a local support group that you could get connected with homeschoolers in your area and be supported that way. So I do have a few clips from the debate on AB 1955 I'd like to share with you, so I'll be doing that next. And just to give you a taste of what the climate was like on the floor of the California State Assembly this morning. So check this out.
Objection? That's granted. Mr. Saley, you are granted 3 minutes to discuss the merits of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you to my colleague from San Diego. I very much appreciate that. What I wanted to say was that the premise of the bill was the fact that school boards are going and passing policies to forcibly out kids to their parents. And I disagree that that is what's happening at the schools. That was the point of my comments. And I reference the Chino policy because that's been the main target of, I believe this bill, is policies of school boards like Chino as forcibly outing. So I wanted to read the policy 50-5010, which says a principal...
Without objection.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Speaker. It says a principal... certified staff and or school counselors shall notify the parents or guardians within 3 days from the date a student is requesting to change information contained in their records. And so that's what the policy is. It's not going out and listening to kids or suspecting a kid might be struggling with their gender identity and running to their parents. It's when the child has come to the school and said, I would like to change my name, change my gender, and I want the school to recognize my new name and gender. I do not think that it's unreasonable that the parents know that change is happening. I do think that's a significant change in that child's life, and the parents should be afforded the opportunity to work through that with their child and provide any support. We know children who struggle with gender identity are at higher risks for all kinds of mental health issues and bullying and whatnot. And I believe that nobody cares more for their kids than their own parents. Are there bad parents? Absolutely. But the overwhelming majority of parents do love and care for their kids. If a teacher or principal has any suspicion that this kid is going to be harmed at the home or the child expresses that, first of all, they can advise the child not to change their records to avoid the notification, or two, they're mandated reporters and they can call for the authorities. So I just want to be clear. We stand with you. We do not want anyone to be bullied or hurt or erased or any of this stuff. We believe these are really big, important issues. When a child is going through this, it's a very difficult and emotional time and complicated time, and we believe that their parents should be there to guide them and help them. And we do not believe that the government, the schools, have any authority to withhold information from parents at all, period. And so this policy has been challenged in court. It's been upheld. There's been multiple court cases now that reaffirm that parents have a right to raise their kids, and these quote-unquote secrecy policies are not constitutional. So I wish we could have this conversation about how do we balance making sure these students have the appropriate resources and protections while at the same time making sure that parents aren't lied to by teachers. That's the conversation I think we should be having. And I wish we could have had that earlier, but I'm glad we have it now, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak. And I know I've spoken to my colleague from San Diego about this issue, and I look forward to more conversations. But unfortunately, as drafted, I have to oppose this bill because it would override policies like Chino's, which I think is a very reasonable and balanced approach that school district has decided to take. So thank you, Mr. Speaker, for allowing me to make my remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Asaley. Mr. Gallagher, you are recognized.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wanted to rise because I think that both sides of this debate care about the children involved, care about the students in these schools. We just come about it from a different standpoint, and what we think is maybe the best approach to helping students who are dealing with gender identity or gender dysphoria. And I think that's another thing to really point out is it's oftentimes we're dealing with children who in school who are dealing with gender dysphoria. They haven't decided they are transgender. They're dealing with gender identity issues and working through that. And the studies show pretty overwhelmingly that a lot of those kids don't end up actually becoming transgender. And they actually revert back to their biological sex. And so where this really began for me is in my district in Chico, this is what happened. And this is, I think, what people need to understand, is the school district in Chico, I know this, was told by the Department of Education, you cannot tell the parents. You know, if a student is asking to use different pronouns or is asking to use a different bathroom, you cannot talk to the parents. And what I've heard from some of the folks on the other side of this debate is that they want administrators and teachers to have discretion. Well, right now, under the current policy, and I think this is a big problem, it's something we should be talking about. They're being told at the school district level that they cannot tell. And that is a secrecy policy. To me, that's the very definition of a secrecy policy. It's not in statute. There is no statute on the books that says that that needs to be the case, but yet school districts are being told to do that. And that's where a lot of these policies generated from. The parent involved in Chico was not told. She testified in front of the committee, and I think maybe some of you guys saw that. This is a very concerned and loving mother. And I appreciated the story that our colleague from Fairfield told. But she got to be told by the teacher. And that's all that people on this side are really asking as well. This mother she was not told. She was left out. And I'll draw another analogy that I have from my own personal experience. I have a child that has an IEP. And when we do IEPs and we're talking about special education and needs that particular students have, we do an individualized education plan and we invite the parents in. I got to sit in on that with counselors, with school officials. I got to help be part of that process. And we have that in statute. That is by statute, that's how that process goes. I'm not saying that's exactly the same as the situation, but there's an analogy that could be drawn. Is how do we actually make sure that all the people are brought into this, and especially the parents, because parents should be involved. And one of the concerns I've had from the beginning with this legislation is that I feel like it almost draws a default of school officials and teachers and counselors are always safe, and parents are not safe. And that's not true. And I think we would probably agree that's not true. I think we would probably agree on both sides. That's not true, right? So I think we could have a better policy that actually ensures that all people are involved to help ensure that the best interests of the child are furthered. And maybe not drawing into polarized positions, you know, on this. As I think we could have that kind of discussion. We could have a better policy. But right now, the default policy, that is what it is, coming out of Department of Education. And it is on Department of Education's website, saying that you shall not tell parents. I think that's wrong. And so as we're debating, you know, this bill today, I think we could, you know, really work on this and make it a better policy for all students in our schools. And I think that's the thing that I would hope that we work on, no matter how this goes forward today. I can't support this policy and this the way this statute is drawn today. But I think seconds. That there needs to be a continued discussion on this. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gallagher. Thank you, Mr. Lowe. Assemblyman Member Joe Patterson, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, I rise in opposition to AB 1955. As many of you know, I don't read from notes very often, but I had to gather my thoughts as this discussion went on. First, I'd like to acknowledge the author of this measure from San Diego and other members of the caucus for meeting with me and having a frank discussion on this measure and opportunities for both of us to express concern. I rise not only as a person concerned about this policy, but also as a parent in a school district that has recently adopted one of these policies. And I'm confident the vast majority of people in this body have not read the actual policies. And if you're interested, I have copies with me today of my own school board's policy. In fact, many school districts in my district have adopted similar policies with some variations, but I'm going to speak about my district. It should surprise absolutely no one that these policies have been, at best, mischaracterized, and to be honest, just complete lies about what these policies do. In my district, the notification to parents occurs only after the student requests a record change, a name change, a gender change, or to utilize segregated bathroom facilities that don't match the gender in which they were born. It is not an outing policy. The student is already out. They've asked the school to call them by a different name. I've heard from some of my colleagues say that these policies require parental notification immediately if heard on the playground or in class or something like that. That is completely false. Notification does not occur even when speaking to a counselor about gender dysphoria. It does not occur when a person is speaking with a teacher, a peer, or being inquisitive. It only occurs when there's actual change of how the student is publicly recognized at school. Finally, most of these policies don't even take effect until they're actually negotiated. The only people left out of this discussion are the parents. The reason you are seeing these policies is because CDE is actually telling districts they must keep it a secret. The author says it is not his intent and instead is to allow a conversation and to leave discretion. But I am sorry, that is not how the California Department of Education is doing it right now. They are actively suing my school district where my children attend. I'm sorry, friends, but this bill makes an assumption that the government and teachers and school administrators are better off at what is better than me. It assumes that their compassion and their love is more than mine. And to my colleagues who are members of the LGBTQ caucus, I appreciate you. I consider many of you my friends. You're great colleagues. We disagree from time to time on social issues, and that's fine. And to my friends who are lesbian, gay, queer, I want the best for you. I want you to have a life of happiness and fulfilled. The debate on this bill is clearly emotional for many of us. So I want to say this. We've had talks privately as colleagues about the way we frame things on social media, etc., how we frame them in discussions here on this floor in ways that don't elicit harm to us as public officials. When folks go out there and make statements that these policies are made to appease extremists or individuals who are hateful to other people, I take a great deal of offense to that. I'm not hateful. You know that. I want what is best for my family and for you and your family and all of Californians. My own chief of staff, who serves as president of the school board of the district that has adopted this policy, she's constantly framed in a paper here, local paper, and constantly attacked as some kind of hateful person. Go meet her. Report back to me if you think she is the type of person who'd adopt a policy that is intended to cause harm. Do you believe that I'm the type of person who comes from a place of hate or harm?
30 seconds.
I don't believe you think that. My views on this policy are consistent with everything that has been regarding parental notification, from giving my child their own right to be taken from their homes for mental health treatment to seeking medical treatment. I consistently oppose these policies. My community is ground zero for this, and I invite all of you to read the policy. And I would like to encourage the author of the bill, if you wouldn't mind, to do something if this bill were to pass. Please write the Department of Education, put the intent of this measure is to encourage a conversation, and maybe there will be times where that conversation can occur with the parents. We cannot allow the Department of Education to ban the conversation of parents. And because of that, I respectfully ask for a no vote.
Thank you, Mr. Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank all my colleagues for your personal and heartfelt words. I almost want to reflect them in my clothes because they were so eloquent and pointed of what we are trying to accomplish here. Coming out, as you've heard, is a very personal decision. Every person has a right to make that for themselves, and it includes the retention of privacy, which has been upheld in courts. LGBTQ students do not waive that right to privacy just because they come out to some people and not to others. Every conversation is its own individual experience, and it comes with its own risks, and it is up to that individual to decide for themselves when and to whom and in what manner to have that conversation, and that process and that moment of connection is important, and it should not be involving an outside actor thrust upon them. In just a few months, since some of our California school districts have passed these forced outing policies, the results have been tested, and they're not good. Schools have been ripped apart. You know what's going on at these school board meetings, the fracturing of communities. But back to the subject of the matter, the youth that are harmed, and not just LGBTQ youth, their friends, the discord amongst the student body, the bullying, the harassment, this is all increasingly evident, exponentially evident in these very same school districts. It is the wrong direction, which is why we need to bring this bill forward here, this bill forward today, to be able to reestablish that baseline from which we were before these policies started to percolate into the California community. Again, I think it's imperative that we want to correct some of the record with facts. This bill does not force schools to keep secrets from parents. The Safety Act merely prohibits school staff from being forced to out students. This bill does not keep double records from parents. Parents and guardians, they have the right to access their students' records through FERPA, and parents will still be able to request and access the student records. I did have the opportunity to be able to go and review some of the local policies, and the challenge there, and maybe we're talking past each other, is that if a student is requesting to change something in their records, first of all, you can't change official school records without the parents involved. That is the law. Records is broadly defined. Is a piece of homework paper a record? Is a note? Anything could be subject to a record search. We know that in other areas of government too. So the problem is how these are, both what these are doing to these local communities, but also how they can be fined, we believe absolutely is gonna cause net harm. And we know it's causing harm to the students. In Chino Valley alone, in a short time after they adopted that policy, there were 1,200 calls from youth within that geographic area to youth mental health crisis lines, compared to 4,000 statewide. That's the magnitude of how things have really blown up. And like I said, not all of them were LGBTQ members, but just, it is the wrong direction, and it is the wrong baseline for our schools. Next, the bill does not take away parents' rights. And as a parent myself, we know this, that parents do have a crucial role in discussions about students' LGBTQ identity, and this bill does not prevent families from having those conversations they've always been free to have, and they should have. This bill will not increase retaliations against any teachers. In fact, this bill strengthens existing retaliation protections against teachers and school staff. And it is built on the foundation that's been tested in some of these exact same court cases, which I am grateful to our Attorney General, our Superintendent of Public Instruction, for having these important conversations, that fundamentally what has not been thrown out is that under our state and federal laws, we have a constitutional right to privacy. In closing, I want to acknowledge that our LGBTQ staff and members of the public who are listening in have had to endure some comments that deeply affect them personally, and I appreciate that. It affects us too. It affects, if you know somebody who is LGBTQ or just care about anybody in general, you've probably felt that pain as well. Now, on the subject of this bill, I'm cisgendered. I'm not transgender. But I know what it's like to face coming out. I know what it's like to have others target you, question you, and deny you. Part of what is happening here is stemming from a national issue thrust upon our community to be targeting transgender individuals. a subset of our community, yes, a united community. Why? Maybe it's politically easy. Maybe I'm not going to repeat what opposition would say about people because it's wrong. But they have, guess what? Transgender individuals also started out as youth. And they go through a very awkward teenage time, just like the rest of us do too. I know some of those youth in my life. I know Leo, I know Sam, I know Rylan, I know Cyrus, and they are awesome. They are real, they're authentic. They're gonna be great humans. And they more or less had the opportunity to be able to have those conversations on their own terms, which is exactly how one should have those conversations. Now, our caucus thought deeply, as this was thrust in California community since last summer, about how to respond, how to wrestle with some of the issues. We have to get this right. And at that time, we told trans youth that felt under attack that we had their back, and we meant it. And we are here today to send this bill to the governor. It's not the job of teachers to be the gender police. They want to teach, and they want to be able to provide a safe and supportive environment, and when they do, students will thrive. Nothing in this bill gets involved in the parent-child relationship. And if we can take this moment in time through conversation of this bill to remember the best practices that we should all try to do as parents is that you can talk to your children and you can have those conversations. They are the last person that you would want to feel rejection from. And as you are having those conversations, please tell them no matter what that you love them. And I respectfully ask for your aye vote and concurrence.
All right, and that's it for today. Thanks for joining us. Hopefully that was eye-opening for you, and in one sense, eye-opening in terms of how blatant some of the folks are that are promoting some of these agendas in our public education system, but also maybe encouraging that there are some legislators standing firm to protect the family in California. So that's it for this week. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks for joining us for this episode of The Frontline with FPM. For more information about the topics we discuss here, check out Family Protection Ministries at fpmca.org and subscribe to our channel.